with the first pick in the 2017 NFL Draft.
This is the Best Player Available podcast.
The Chicago Bears select Mitchell Trubisky. The Kansas City Chiefs select Patrick Mahomes. The Houston Texans select Deshaun Watson.
It's time to go inside the league's look at the 2017 NFL Draft with the people who made the picks. Here's your host, Neil Stratton.
Welcome to the Best Player Available podcast. I'm Neil, and my website is Inside the League. We're here for episode 7, this week with former Packers area scout Charlie Pepper. After the completion of Charlie's 7-year NFL playing career, he joined the Packers as a scouting assistant in 2016 before spending 2 years as Green Bay's Southwest area scout. Welcome to the podcast, Charlie.
Hey, thanks for having me, Neil. Glad to be here.
Good to have you, buddy. All right, Neil, so let's get into it. Let's start off with a question that's kind of become pretty standard on this podcast. If the Packers had the top pick in the draft that year, who would you have taken, and who were the players that y'all had kind of highest in the 17 class?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in 2017, I think you just can't be cute about it. I think you got to take Myles Garrett. Obviously – looking back now, you could obviously say maybe Patrick Mahomes, but if you're going off of just the film at the time, I think it's Myles Garrett. A guy was just an elite athlete. You know, he was big, he was long, was 6'4 and a half, 270 plus, 35-inch arms. Just had the size, the length, and strength to set the edge versus the run. And in today's NFL especially, I don't think it's a guy you can pass up on. So, I would have to say I think Myles Garrett would have been the guy still.
Okay. Now, you got to – as a Southwest area scout, you got to see them both. Was there ever a time when you thought, hey, maybe – I know we are set at quarterback, but here's a guy that could be something special?
Yeah, it was interesting. So just to kind of give a little bit of perspective on kind of where I was at 2017 draft. So that was – I was finishing up my first year as a scouting intern. And so really technically by responsibility, I was a pro scout. So I didn't get to do a lot of write-ups or evaluations on any of the college prospects until it came to draft meetings. Then we did cross checks, we had breakout meetings and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I did get to go into Texas Tech and TCU as kind of my development. And so I did get to see Mahomes. And now he was a guy, his film, when you watch his film, the talent just jumps off the tape immediately. You can see the baseball in him right away, just the way he throws the football from all different platforms and arm angles, and just kind of the savvy and the confidence he had in his game. That jumped off immediately. But at the same time, it was that system he was in. He didn't really have a great supporting cast. He's playing in the Big 12. So it was kind of muddied the waters for me, especially being a young scout. When I watched him, I saw a guy that this guy has a chance to be a star, but no way would I thought he would have been what he is this quickly, like for sure. But I'll admit, I definitely thought this guy could be a star, but no way this quick, because he was launching the ball 60 times a game. His mechanics were all over the place. He would throw it flat-footed. He'd throw it in a double curve. He's doing a bunch of stuff. So I didn't know how that would translate in my mind at the time. I thought he would need some development. I saw him as a guy that you put him behind. Hey, that'd be cool if we could get him here and put him behind A-Rod for a couple of years, and then you might have some, But little did I know, this guy didn't need that much time. And obviously, he went to the right place. When I watched the film in real time, to me, it was still Myles Garrett. He didn't jump off as a guy that I thought, oh, you got to take this guy number one. But I did feel that this guy had what it took to be a star. He was special. How we had, I know I might be going off a tangent on your question, but I think how we had the quarterback stacked, I think we had Deshaun first and then Mahomes second, but I like Mahomes first. Mm-hmm. That was me personally, but I thought he could be what he is now. I just didn't think it would happen in year two, you know, or this quick at all. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, he was fun to watch. I would still take Myles Garrett just going off of the film at that time. But it's a good question. That's a good question to ask.
Charlie, how much of Myles was the fact that he plays an impact position? I mean, if he's a three tech or a pure nose, but he has the same ability, the same tools, the same production, do you still take him number one overall?
That's another good question. Maybe not, because of, you know, because I think just the value at the defensive end position, especially in today's game, you know, obviously that's why I think he went number one, but his measurables, I feel like he's better as an outside player, you know, maybe a 3-4 DN, but I think, that's a good question. Maybe if he was able to be just as dominant from being a D tackle, like let's say his dominance was the same, possibly, because I mean he was a special athlete and it stood out on tape. But you do have questions and reservations if he's not a DN, that's for sure. You know, things start to change. Other positions might start to creep up there. Maybe a quarterback goes number one. So I think the value does drop for sure, because I believe. And this was kind of their philosophy too, and probably everybody's philosophy, but, you know, quarterbacks, left tackles, you know, DNs are kind of the guys you kind of prioritize up in the top five, you know, type picks, top 10 early picks. But if he was just as dominant as a D tackle, I mean, me being a defensive player, I wouldn't have any problems taking him at number one. But, you know, when you're, you know, roster construction, team building and value and all that stuff, I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One of the themes that I've kind of picked up on as we move through this is that if a kid is a dominant player but doesn't play at an impact position, he's much less likely to go in that top 5 to 10 picks. And I guess that's kind of what I was getting at with that question. It seems like you're kind of in agreement with me on at least on that trend across the league at this point.
Yeah, you know, and that's just kind of par for the course thinking, I guess, across the league. But for me, I just like good football players. I would probably be the type of guy, if I like a guy and I think he can help us, and you know, he's an elite player, you know, I would take him regardless. you know, even not to change subjects, but even, you know, in 2018 draft, I believe that was 2018, I think, when Baker came out, I would have had a tough time taking Baker over Saquon just because of how I view Baker, but I understand the value. So I know you can't do that. And also at that time, I was still learning how to quote unquote, or how to scout quote unquote the NFL way. You know, I don't think you can take a certain position over a quarterback, you know, a running back over a quarterback at number one. But I mean, the way Miles dominated and just his traits, even if he was that D tackle, you know, it might've been something I would have battled with, but again, when you, like you said, when you're building a roster and you're looking long-term and, you know, going, talking about value and whatnot, those are the things that you have to think about. And, you do kind of lose some value with a different position there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I gotcha. Now, can you talk about the other players that were kind of the elite prospects on the Packers board that year?
Yeah. Again, you know, that was really my first draft. So I'll give you a perspective from a young, wide-eyed scout trying to take it all in. I can't remember exactly how everybody was stacked. Mm-hmm. But I do remember some of the players that we were high on. And this won't really be in any particular order as I throw the names out.
Right.
But obviously, you know, Myles Garrett was up there, number one. That was easy. Jamal Adams, we really liked. And not just because of his play, but his leadership as well, and just his toughness. And he was just a hell of a football player. So, Leonard Fournette was up there for us as well, which is kind of a funny story because initially he didn't really impress me when I watched his tape his junior year. Yeah, he came out as a junior. So his junior tape, and I got to see him in person. They actually played Wisconsin, I believe it was, in Green Bay. Had a little classic there. And, you know, but little did I know he was battling ankle injuries at the time. But I just wasn't impressed with him. Obviously, you saw the elite traits. I mean, he was a big, strong, fast kid. But I wasn't blown away. And, you know, I was telling one of our area scouts at the time, Charles Walls, who had his area, and he was telling me to go back and watch last year. I said, okay. Mm-hmm. I went back and watched his sophomore tape. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. Now I see what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But even with that said, he still wasn't my cup of tea. But great player. We had him up there. I think you have to kind of put him up there at number one. With that being said, I think, Deshaun Watson was up there. Patrick Mahomes was up there. Mm-hmm. Christian McCaffrey. And we had some corners we really liked. Marshawn Lattimore from Oklahoma. I mean, excuse me, Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Marlon Humphrey. I know they really liked. Even though his issue, I remember, I mean, he was, I really liked Marlon as well. They really liked him as they thought he was someone who was going to be a professional right away. And they liked his speed, his size, his toughness, his IQ. I think one hang up I remember they kept talking about was for some reason he had issues with the deep ball every now and then. I don't know if he couldn't locate it, couldn't track it. But that was kind of one issue they talked about, but that didn't stop him from, you know, throwing his tag up there in the first round.
Sure.
OJ Howard was a guy.
Okay.
They liked and Jabril Peppers. Ted really liked Jabril Peppers. And it was interesting. He actually really liked him at corner, believe it or not. I wasn't sold on him there. I thought he was kind of more of a hybrid, you know, playing the box, blitzing, do a bunch of different things. But Ted, at that time, he really liked him at corner. And I think he was seriously in play if we would have, you know, stayed and picked where we were at, if he would have been there, going into it. I think that was one thing they talked about. And again, like I said, you know, I was a young scout, so I wasn't privy to most of those conversations.
Sure.
And I'm getting trickle down whispers and, you know, and whatnot. I'm just trying to discern from what's going on in the conversations and things. But I feel if the conditions were right, I think we might have taken Jabril, with our first pick in the first round. I think we were at 29, if that was correct. I think we traded with Cleveland, traded back. But yeah, those are some of the guys that I remember they really liked off the top of my head, yeah.
Charlie, two players that you named there, O.J. Howard and Marlon Humphrey, came out of a program that has been the elite program, at least for the last decade. But one thing that's come up in conversation as we've conducted this podcast is there's a concern among scouts that players come out of Alabama broken because they're going ones-on-ones all the time. They're probably in pads more than your garden variety school. Was that a concern at all to y'all?
I mean, it's something you have to consider, but I don't think at the end of the day it was a concern that would, like, move anybody down. I think it's just something to be aware of. And to be honest, I think it can be a little bit overblown. In my opinion, it was more of those guys being so tough in the mindset of that program. They're just playing through a lot of stuff, you know, because the weight program, the strength and conditioning program there is top notch. So even though they're getting beat up, they're still able to go out there and push through things. You know, just like we saw Jaylen Waddle, I have no idea how this guy was able to play in the national championship game. And I don't even know who advised them to do it, but that kind of gives you the mindset of the program more than just them wearing those guys out. It's those guys just want to play and, you know, they don't want to miss time. I mean, but it is a concern, you know, when you're investing in these players long-term, but I feel, you know, it depended on the situation, obviously, and who it is and the injury history. I don't think it was enough for us to downgrade anybody just off of that stereotype, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really impact, you know, with Marlon and OJ. Not that I can remember. I don't think that was a discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, last week we talked to Dane Vandernat, who was with the Raiders, and Dane kind of laughingly alluded to the fact that, you know, they had quite a few Tennessee folks in their draft room and on their staff. And so he never had to ask questions about the Tennessee guys because they're always blowing them up and advocating for them and that kind of thing. Did you ever find yourself as a Tide grad yourself having to check your preference on a guy, or maybe feel like, oh my gosh, am I leaning more towards this guy because I've got a soft spot for the school?
Oh yeah, no question. And just being a young scout, period, I had to learn to get rid of biases and learn to evaluate it, you know, a certain type of way, and, you know, things like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, being a former player, I just left it to the tape, you know, like whatever I saw on tape, I kind of let that be it. But, you know, I was able to have a little bit more inside information on some of the guys. And so from that reason, maybe it you know, some of those evaluations maybe came with bias because I knew a little bit more about those guys initially than some of the other guys, just because of some of the relationships I have down there, and they're telling me more background information. But, you know, just because they're from my alma mater, I don't think that was the case, but it was just, I was able to get more information on those guys and some other guys. But I mean, I'd be lying if I was to say there wasn't any bias. You know, I think that's just natural. You know, you're always going to be somewhat of a homer, mm-hmm, to your alma mater.
Mm-hmm. No, I get it. It's not a flaw, but I guess it's something you kind of got to keep in mind as you evaluate, because we're all humans, and the human element is a big part of any kind of evaluation.
Right. Right.
Okay. So, Charlie, by any stretch of the imagination, y'all had an elite quarterback, and the quarterback position is such an important part of a football team that it's got to affect everything, from how you sign your free agents to how you conduct your drafts. Knowing that you had Aaron Rodgers under center and that he was still in the prime of his career, how did that change the way, or did it change the way that you approached the draft? Were you more prone to swing for the fences because you knew you always had a chance because you had such a player? Were you more prone to want to do things to give him weapons, or maybe to protect him, you know, in the offensive line because of that? Or did you feel like, well, we've got Aaron Rodgers, that fixes all of our problems on offense pretty much. That frees us up to draft more on defense. Did any of those things come into play, or none of them?
You know, I don't think, you know, that's a great question. I don't think that they consciously thought like that because they had, you know, a future Hall of Famer quarterback, but maybe subconsciously it showed up and how they went about doing business. But to be honest, I felt like they kind of took the same approach every year for the most part, just take the best player available, you know, and that kind of comes from the Ron Wolf philosophy, you know, and I think that, you know, so I think that was more the case. And going back to the question, answering your question about protecting him, yes, it was a priority, but not as aggressively as you would have thought, you know. I think they took they might have taken two first rounders over the past since the Super Bowl. He's won the Super Bowl, and I don't think, I think maybe one panned out, or none of them panned out, actually, I think, or two early picks. I think Garrett Sherrod, I think they took 1 year out of Mississippi State in the first round, mm-hmm, and he didn't pan out due to injuries. So they tried to protect them, you know, but as far as getting early picks in there, Bulaga was early pick, but that was his rookie year when we won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, and ever since then, they kind of more – They what they really did, Neil, is they did a great job of finding talent later in the round as far as protecting Aaron, you know, linemen and undrafted free agents and developing them. Mm-hmm. And I think that more than anything kind of led to maybe not reaching for players high, because they had success with that, you know, with David Bakhtiari in the fourth round. Forgot what year that was. That might have been 2013 or 2014. JC Treader, you know, in the fourth round.
you know, Corey Linsley in the fifth round, you know, and our O-line coach at the time, James Camp, and he did a hell of a job of getting those guys prepared. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, you know, that played a part in it as well, that they were able to find quality guys later in the draft. And so I guess they felt they never really needed to reach high. And again, this is all speculation again.
Sure.
I'm a young scout. I'm not privy to any of those conversations or decisions, but at the time, and that's kind of what I saw. And I think you do get comfortable when you have a quarterback like that, you know, like you're able to, like I said, I don't think it was a conscious thing. I just think, you know, I mean, you got to think, shoot, let's see. They went to the NFC Championship 4 out of the last 7 years, I guess. And, yeah. You know, and that's without any superstar wide receivers other than, you know, Devontae Adams, who,
right.
Funny enough, a lot of people might not know this. His first couple of years, there was a lot of people in the building that were kind of unhappy with him because of his slow start. You know, he was injured, and I would say he carried a little bit more weight than he usually did. And, you know, so it was a little slow start for him. And there was some chatter going on of, you know, scouts get and people get. But he ended up turning around, and you see how he is now. But A-Rod was kind of A-Rod, you know, he was able to overcome a bunch of those obstacles, guys that didn't pan out in the draft, and just, you know, even mediocre talent that had been around him, he was able to kind of overcome that. So I think maybe, like I said, maybe subconsciously they did move around like that, thinking, hey, we're still doing okay, even though we're not getting these superstars that we want around him in certain places. And I think it allowed them to kind of just build the team normal, you know, as they want to do it, just a total team building philosophy versus focusing on, hey, we got to get him weapons. We got to get these guys to protect him. It just was allowed them to kind of sit back and build the team naturally from a total holistic standpoint.
Sure. And it is a luxury, but at the same time, I mean, I think the Packers can be applauded for not, I guess, taking too much advantage of that. I would argue that the Packers have been consistently one of the top 5 to 10 teams, probably 5 to 6 teams drafting year over year. I mean, not every pick is going to be a hit, but the overall, I think that the draft classes that y'all were able to put together all speak for themselves and just had a really incredible run. Okay, so let's move past Aaron Rodgers and talk a little bit more about the quarterbacks, and you've already touched on that some, Charlie. You just referenced the fact that y'all saw Deshaun Watson probably as the top quarterback in the class, followed by Mahomes, even though Mahomes had an incredible skill set. What about Mitch Trubisky? Where did y'all see him? How much work did you do on him? I realize he wasn't your area per se, but he was, obviously one of the most talked about prospects in the draft, and he played an impact position. Where were y'all on him?
Trubisky, like you mentioned, our order was Deshaun, Mahomes, and then we kind of had Trubisky a little further down, I think even like maybe second round, maybe even third round even. I can't remember exactly how he stacked, but he was down there, and we cut on the film. I wasn't impressed. I mean, you saw some impressive physical traits. You know, he had a quick release and some accuracy and could run a little bit, but I didn't see, and I didn't know who the guy was, obviously, until we kind of started diving into him for me. And so I'm just going off of first impressions, no bias. And he didn't do it for me. And we weren't high on him either. And we kind of almost applauded and high-fived when the Bears moved up to take him. You know, we're like, hey, it helps us out. But, you know, I still don't know to this day what it was that they saw in him over everybody else. Because for us, obviously, skill-wise, we liked Mahomes. Obviously, you know, Watson too. But Watson just had, a better, more of a complete picture, I guess. You know, played at a bigger school. The Alabama game, I think, really did it too. If you don't remember, when he played, when they beat Alabama his last year, he actually kind of started off a little slow, mm-hmm. got rattled quite a bit, in the beginning, and I'm thinking, okay, we're about to see what he's made of. And then he kind of settled in, stood up tall, and just, and you know, brought them back. And so that's, that showed us something. That showed me something. I think that that for me is what kind of pushed him up there. And just the whole totality of his career at Clemson. And then Mahomes, you obviously have questions about, because he's such a good gunslinger and his mechanics and the system, and you know, they didn't really, he didn't really win a lot. You know, and you can't put all of that on him because, I mean, they'd put up 50, 60 points and still lose, right. You know?
Right.
But, you know, you saw what you saw with Mahomes. I think anybody that saw him knew this, this guy is going to be a great player. You just don't know how great. But with Trubisky, I just, he just kind of looked like a guy, you know, he just, to me, just looked like, and this is not a knock on him or the Bears, you know, what they saw, but just my intuition, my evaluation that I, you know, the 4 or 5 games that we watched, I just saw Division One starter, and you're supposed to be that good, you know, but I didn't see anybody worthy of being picked in the first round, even in my opinion. So I, you know, I don't know what it was, especially him being a first year starter. As for me, that first year players, you know, 1 year players always kind of give me pause or hesitation.
Sure.
And then to move up and have him be the, you know, the first quarterback taken, you know, I didn't understand. But, you know, again, like I said, I keep saying it, I was a young scout. And so in my mind, I'm thinking like, well, maybe they know something I don't know. Maybe yeah. They, you know, they're going to develop him in a way that I have no idea. Because I will say, the way I watched Aaron Rodgers, a lot of people might not be aware of, when he would have been good anywhere. But the way I saw Aaron develop at Green Bay showed me something, because he wasn't slinging it as hard as he was when he first came in the league. I don't care what anybody says.
Sure.
I mean, I watched his arm get stronger. I watched his, I mean, his accuracy was already good. But I mean, I just watched him develop the way he developed. So I was in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, maybe they see something that I have no clue about. And, you know, he might be something. But initially, and, you know, so far, I seem to be right. I just didn't see it. And you know, as a room, as a group, we didn't really see it either. So we kind of had Trubisky down there.
Let me expand on that a little bit, because that is kind of interesting, Charlie. When a team in the NFL takes a player second overall, well, moves up to take a player right. second overall, that a guy maybe y'all had at the bottom of your top 100, does it give you pause at all to say, my gosh, is there something obvious that we're missing? Or is it strictly, hey, we did our homework. We know exactly who this guy is. We applaud. We high five. We celebrate this.
No, I mean, at the time, obviously gave me pause. But no, as a room, as those guys, no, they're super confident in the homework that they do and the process that they go by. And especially that group of guys. You know, I've been around a bunch of scouts, and I have to say, like, the football minds that are in that room, from the time that I was there as a player, I mean, Reggie McKenzie was there, you know, Snyder, McLuhan had even been there, you know, Dorsey, just the way they went about it. And no, I don't think anything like that gave them pause or anything like that. Maybe if it was like something about character that popped up they didn't know about, you know, that's right. different. But as far as when their evaluations are done and they feel good about it and they close the book and something like that happens, no, I don't think for one bit that it gave them pause. They knew, I mean, like I said, they were, there was some, maybe I'm giving too much information, but, you know, there was some chuckling going on and there was some high five, you know, like, hey, if that's who you want to take, you take them. You know, they're confident in the grade that they put on them. And I think that was that. With those guys.
Now, did you get to see Oklahoma at all that year, Charlie?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did.
So in 2018, I know we're talking about the 2017 draft, but in 2018, as you know, the number one pick was Baker Mayfield. Did you see the magic that would take him from being – maybe a day three guy, maybe even a UDFA going into the 18 season that boosted him into being, you know, the number one pick in the draft. And do you think there was maybe some bias against him going into 18 because he had come out of that system originally at Tech, and maybe some people saw him as just, you know, just another guy that's kind of a Mike Leach product to some degree?
You know, for me, yes. I think for everybody else, I think I could, you know, like I said, being a young guy, for me, those were kind of some of the things that, because I honestly, I wasn't, because that next year is when I moved to the college scouting position, and I did a full workup on him. And honestly, and I got some flack from it, but I didn't think Baker was a franchise quarterback to me. I mean, I thought he was a hell of a player. I thought he was a good player. I thought he was a winner. I thought he could be a starting quarterback. I just didn't think he was a franchise guy, if that makes sense. But, you know, and for the reasons you mentioned, you know, kind of the system, I mean, guys were wide open, and that's not his fault, but I mean, guys were wide open. I mean, you saw his accuracy, you saw his leadership, and, you know, he had some, and his mobility, trickiness in the pocket, you saw all those things. And so I could see why people would like fall in love with him and could take him high. But for me, I probably wouldn't have done that. And I'll still stand by it. Even though he's definitely proved me wrong, he's been way better than I gave him credit for. But I still feel the jury is out as far as being a long-term franchise guy. But I think for him, I liked Sam Darnold coming out better than him, but I was so far I've been wrong there. But yeah, all those things gave me pause. The system, and you don't want to hold anybody's origins against them, but in my mind, you know, he was a walk-on for a reason. You know, that's kind of how I felt about it when I was going through the process, you know, and then he obviously left Texas Tech and went there and whatnot. But so I didn't see a number one overall pick, but I could see why guys liked him. And, you know, really loved him. I know Elliot Wolf really liked him. He was high on him. And I just wasn't there with him, but I can see why. And he did everything right. He deserved to go where he went. Don't get me wrong. He won the Heisman. You know, he played his butt off. But for me, translating to the NFL, in my opinion, I didn't see it. But so it was a surprise. I didn't see that rise. No.
Well, you know, if we were doing this podcast last year, you look like a genius, Charlie. You know, the final chapter hasn't been written on Baker Mayfield's career yet. I mean, he had a nice season, but, you know, don't beat yourself up too much. Not yet. There's not in the NFL where, you know, NFL stands for not for long, as we all know.
Right.
Okay. Right. So there were six cornerbacks taken in the first 33 picks that year. How did you stack the cornerback class, if you recall, and was – you know, ultimately, y'all's selection was Kevin King, who you took at 33. And you moved back, as you alluded to earlier, you moved back from 29 to make that selection. Was King a guy that you targeted? Or was King a guy that you saw, hey, listen, he's one of the guys we kind of like. He's probably going to be there. But if he's not, maybe we go with somebody else. I mean, how did y'all look at the cornerback board that year?
You know, honestly, I don't know what their thought process was. I do know we did want to take a corner, you know, at some point, the DBs for sure. But I don't know if they had anybody they were targeting necessarily. Because once we traded back, I don't know what their thought process was. I don't know why. You know, I'm assuming we got a call to move back. You know, I'm not sure if Ted wanted to do that, because once we got to that point, I think there were still guys on the board that they felt good about that they could get at the end, you know, beginning of the second round. Because I think we picked first in the second round that year. So I think once they saw Kevin King was probably still going to be there, they probably felt comfortable moving back. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not exactly sure. But our area scout, Sammy Seal, the West Coast scout, he was high on Kevin King, and they really respect his opinion. Mm-hmm. People across the league respect his opinion. And in his mind at the time, he thought the two best corners were Sidney Jones and Kevin King coming out of Washington. And so I don't know what the play was the whole time. But I do know, you know, we had some DBs that kind of really weren't panning out. So I figured we would go there, you know, Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins were kind of not really what they wanted to be. And so they were kind of trying to shore that up a little bit. And with Kevin,
he was a really interesting prospect. Because his game film was good. It was good. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was good. Mm-hmm. But when he tested out, his length, his speed, I mean, his short shuttle, I want to say was a sub-4.
Wow.
Or right at 4. It was like, maybe you can look it up. I don't know. But he really had the movement skills of a 5'11 guy and the length, you know, to go with it. And so most people kind of had the perception, oh, he's, you know, long cover 3 corner. When, no, this guy can stop, turn, flip, you know, come out of breaks. He was really agile. Mm-hmm. And I think they really liked that. And skill set wise, he showed he could be, when he came to camp and whatnot, our corner coach at the time, Joe Witt, DB coach, he thought he had an all-pro skill set.
Interesting.
Now, the reason he hasn't gotten there yet, in my opinion, is more on him. But there's no reason why this guy can't be an all-pro type player from the skill set. As far as him to be that long, flexible, fluid, quick, he was a good player. He just had some injury deal with the shoulder and whatnot. But so Kevin King was a guy they really liked. And I think once they saw they could get him, I'm assuming that's when they felt good about moving back. But as far as the rest of the corners, I mean, they liked a lot of those guys. They weren't going to get them. They were going to go pretty high. But interestingly enough, my favorite corner I liked was, to be honest, was Tre'Davious White. And maybe it's the player in me because, you know, measurables and testing wise, he's not going to blow it out of the water. But his game film to me, out of all those guys, even Marshawn Lattimore, to me was the most impressive. And I say that because it was just the consistency. It was the toughness, the football IQ. I mean, he was just a good football player. Like he would probably have been a coach's dream, you know, type of guy. Mm-hmm. But with the other guys, you saw the elite athleticism. You saw the ceiling. You know, you saw the fluidity, the bend, you know, with Marshawn and with Marlon Humphrey. You saw the elite traits, the physicality, the versatility. You know, you saw those things. But with Tre'Davious White, I thought he was the most consistent player and the best football player to me. So I really liked him. I was hoping we would have taken him, but he obviously was taken off the board. But, you know, and Adoree Jackson, too, I liked him, too, because of his speed and versatility. We liked him as well, but he was still a little raw, I think, when I remember. He was also a track guy. Mm-hmm. From what I remember. And he, I think sometimes in the spring, I think he didn't do spring ball often because he was running track. So that kind of bumped him down in our board. But I think they really felt good about the corner class. Like you were saying, there were 6 of them that went. They felt good about the depth. So I think, and Kevin King was high on their board. So, you know, I think they felt good about sitting back and getting any one of those guys towards the back end of the first round or beginning of the second round and would have been happy. And they were happy.
Now, as you recall, was Conley in y'all's top group? I mean, I think there was maybe some surprise that he went in the first round that year, especially given that he had a pretty rough 48 hours leading into that draft. Do you recall kind of where you had him?
Well, yeah, I remember that. Those allegations came out. No, he wasn't a top guy for us. And I was shocked personally. He was a guy I really don't remember us talking a whole lot about as far as, I mean, the discussions were had, but as far as, you know, really being interested in the guy, I don't remember that being the case with Connolly. But so when he got drafted as high as he did, I was surprised and they didn't, you know, they didn't seem to mind at all, but no, he wasn't a guy that was high on our board as everybody else. I think Adoree Jackson, those guys were higher. But I could be wrong, but I just from remembering, I felt like that those other group of guys, those other 4 or 5 guys, 6 guys were higher.
Mm-hmm. Now, Charlie, you're a former college and NFL defensive back yourself. if anyone knows position, I mean, I can't imagine anyone knows more based on the fact that you are not only a player, but also an evaluator. Looking, given your experience and what you've seen and what all those kind of things, you know, you talked about how Tre'Davious White was a film. He checked all the boxes. Whereas maybe an Adoree Jackson was, look what he could be. Maybe a Kevin King was, look at that link. Look at that 389 short shuttle. Look what he could be.
389, that's what it was? Woo!
Yeah, 389. By the magic of Wikipedia, at 6.032 and 200 pounds. So that's a freak right there.
Yeah.
Based on you, Charlie Pepper, and your experiences, would you be more likely to take the guy that's the film, the freak on film, or the freak on pro day?
Okay, that's kind of a multi-answer question. So for me, and I keep prefacing this, but as a young scout, I would have probably went with Tre'Davious, but I was learning how some, you know, when to gamble on upside or when you go on some elite traits that you just can't coach, you know, things like that. So that was always kind of a struggle for me. Think, you know, in my mind, I always thought like, what would I do if I'm a decision maker? You know, what route would I go? But I always tend to lean with, man, I just think you got to go with what you got, what you see. You know, I think potential, you know, you still always, you know, there was a saying, potential will get you fired, you know?
Yeah.
But I get it, man. But you also got to take risks, you know, if you want to get places. But for me, I probably would have been the type of guy to see somebody for what they are on film, know what you're going to get and go with that. But I get the enticement of somebody like a Marshawn and even an Adoree where he potentially still has another level to go. You know, he still has more development and can improve and level up. And you might have something there, but for me, I think I would have taken your safer players, cleaner players. I think that's what I would have done. And I think that's kind of my stance as of now.
Now, did you see Lattimore as more of a projection or more of a guy who did check out on film and did have the production, even in his limited time in Columbus?
A little bit of both, but I mean, and I say the projection part only because his elite traits, if you take that and stretch that over a 10-year career, you know, even though he had only had a 1 year, you know, was a starter for 1 year, I guess, you know, you might go from that to having an all-pro type player, you know, maybe a Hall of Fame type player if he plays his cards right, you know. So I say projection from that standpoint. You know, I still, Tre'Davious just, his film just sat different with me than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I looked at it. But when I say projection for Marshawn, it's just more how great can he be? Not that he wasn't going to be a good pro, but it's, you know, this guy has a chance because of his athletic ability to be one of the, you know, if you're just looking at traits, you know, to be one of the best, but who knows, you know?
Sure. No, I get it. All right. We're going to talk about running backs here in a second. Yeah. So the team took three running backs on day three that year, which I thought was really interesting, and hit on two of them. UTEP's Aaron Jones, BYU's Jamal Williams, and Utah State's Devontae Mays. Was that your plan to take running backs late? And did you do that because you missed on one of the premier backs? I mean, it was a running back laden draft. You know, was it the plan to kind of skip those guys? Was the plan to maybe go after one of those guys? Or was it merely the fact that, you know, as you've touched on, and it's called the Best Player Available podcast, were these the three players that were the best ones on the board when it came around to you on day three?
I know I sound like a broken record, but I'm not exactly sure on the plan, but I think I felt like it was more the latter, that these guys fell to where they were and they had a lot of upside. They really liked them. And they were still available around the fourth, fifth, sixth round, seventh round. And I think maybe, you know, cause Eddie Lacy, there were still questions of him coming back and
that's kind of a whole nother story in itself. The whole interview process with him, you know, as a free agent didn't really go too well for both sides. And so I think they were thinking maybe they might move on. And so I feel like maybe they're thinking we're just going to take this depth. It's here and we got guys we really like, and they can't believe that they're here. And if we take three, maybe we'll hit on one or two, you know, and see what happens. And that's actually kind of what happened. And so I feel like that was more the mindset, if I had to guess, versus like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go in and take three guys. Cause I don't think they thought going in that some of these guys would be there as late as they were. And so I think once they got to the point in that draft and the way the board was stacked and how the draft had developed for us, that I think, why not? Cause they did that with receivers as well in other drafts. And I think it was kind of the same mindset, if I had to guess. But I think that's more just best player available, and these guys had high upside, and why not, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question about it. Now, was UTEP – I know every team draws the country differently. Was UTEP part of the Southwest for you, and did you get to see him?
It was part of the Southwest, but that year, no, I didn't go in there. But I do know our Southwest area guy at the time who went in there – he kept saying that was his guy. He's like, really? He really liked this guy. Yeah, he really liked this guy. And, you know, I'm just kind of looking over his testing numbers, and I'm thinking like, all right, you know, you see the film. He's breaking away from everybody, but he only ran, what was it, a 4.5 something? And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. But I think he might have been dealing with an ankle injury or something. But yeah, our area guy at the time really, really liked him, called him his guy. And I think they, you know, when his name came up in the sixth round, I believe it was, because the sixth round, I believe.
Fifth round.
And he was fifth or sixth?
Fifth.
Fifth? Okay, yeah, when he came up and he was still there, I think they had to take him, you know. They trust the area guys a lot. And I think when he was still there, they were like, why not? Let's do it.
So that is kind of part of the DNA at Green Bay. You feel like they do trust the area guys and give them kind of that kind of validation?
I do, and it's because of, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of great football minds in that building. And so when they hire guys, they're not just kind of hiring what's the term? You know, guys that are just going to go out and collect data and
right.
You know, they got guys that they trust their opinion, and they believe in them. And so, you know, the process kind of handles all of that, and they've really put a lot of trust in the process. And I think you put all that together, you know, the area guys have a lot of clout. Now, at the end of the day, obviously, it's the directors and Ted. He's going to do his own thing, which is a funny story I can kind of tell you a little later, or maybe I'll slip it in now. Ted, they did say Ted used to have a deal where you see the draft board, but that's not really the draft board. Like he could sometimes, you know, and rest in peace to Ted. I love that guy.
Of course,
you know,
of course.
Great guy. RIP. They said he had a way where he had his own secret board where he would let you put the magnet. He'd let you put the magnets up where, you know, where they kind of agreed at that time. But in his mind, he knows where he really wants them. And but he's not telling anybody, you know, and so he would surprise, he would even surprise the directors, you know, come down to the last second. And, you know, you hear some funny stories about that. But for the most part, yeah, you know, because of the football background a lot of those guys had and just the way the process was set up and the tree they came from, they really gave a lot of respect and clout and leeway to the area scouts and really trusted their opinion. So mm-hmm.
I think that's a model that's worked for them. And I think I would argue that the teams that are really heavy on data collection only and less maybe on evaluation out of their area scouts have paid the price for that. But I'm not trying to be critical of anyone. That's just an observation.
I agree because it's easy to get trapped into analytics and height, weight, speed and kind of just – overlook some of the other things that go into it when it comes to football, the game of football. And I think the Packers and the other organizations, you know, like the top 5-6, they do a good job of that, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. So another interesting running back, maybe for a different reason that year, was Joe Mixon out of Oklahoma. Do you recall what your posture was? When I say you're the team's posture on Mixon, I mean, was he on your board? Was he on your board with an asterisk? Was he a guy that kind of checked out and might have been a possibility for the Packers?
That is a great question. And interestingly enough, that was something I was wanting to know when we were going through the process. Like, how are we going to do this? We don't have an owner. You know, what's going to be the thought process here? And now for me, he was my favorite running back.
Really?
Yes. I liked him the best. Just his height, weight, speed, combination, agility, just his whole overall game. I liked him the best. You know,
you liked him over Fournette, McCaffrey, Cook, Kamara, Hunt, all those guys.
And obviously I didn't do a deep dive into all those other guys.
Right.
But for me, I liked him more than Fournette because I'm not a huge fan of just kind of big bruisers. You know, I give them the respect because, I mean, he was an elite prospect, but play style wise, I like Joe Mixon. I thought he was built. If you've ever seen him in person, his lower body, his trunk is thick. You know, he was a young kid. I felt he could do everything McCaffrey could do, Dalvin Cook could do, Kamara, all those guys, and was built stronger. And he was younger. If I recall, he was the youngest, I think. And, you know, so that was my mindset. For us, obviously we have Fournette and then McCaffrey and then Cook and Kamara. Joe Mixon, that, you know, that was going to be interesting because he was such a great player. How far a guy's going to be willing to go to overlook the incident? And when we dived into it, you start to sniff out that in domestic violence is no way condoned ever. Sure. But you start to sort out that that's not really who the type of guy he was, and he never really had any issues kind of before that or really after that of significance. Right. And the situation itself, again, I'm not making any excuses, but the situations itself, you know, it was understandable he took some type of action, but definitely the wrong action. But, you know, when you hear the whole story, you know, there was a reason for it, not justified, but there was a reason. But, you know, when all that got sorted out, long story short, I didn't think we would bring him in, but we brought him in for a player visit. You know, one of the
interesting
30 or 50, I forget the number we get, visits that we got, we brought him in. And I was kind of shocked, you know, and I was one of the scouts that hosted him. And, we talked and picked his brain and whatnot. And and he seemed like a good kid, was just young and just, you know.
Made a mistake.
Made a mistake. And he bounced back. He faced the music. He did everything he needed to do. And he stayed out of trouble so far. And so, you know, I was hoping we would get him. I was really wanting us to draft him if we had a chance. But after our, you know, two early draft meetings and when we come back in, reconvene before the draft, I noticed his name wasn't on the board. And I think that just came from, you know, the board and some of the execs or whatever. I don't think it was something we could have done, but I know they wanted guys in the building, really liked him and they wanted to, but at the end of the day, I think, and we went through the process,
of course,
you know, brought him in. I even had him on the board for a little while and then at the end of the day, just something that I don't think we could have done, a pick we could have made.
Sure. No, I get it. It was a difficult situation. To his credit, to the Bengals' credit, it seems like he's been a model citizen since he's gotten to the league. And so, you root for the players and hopefully he's figured that out. Now, another player that I'm a Saints guy. I can only imagine what kind of a player Alvin Kamara would have been in Green Bay's offense. Where'd y'all have him? What'd you think about him? All those kind of things.
You know, I know we were high on him. And for me, I didn't know a lot about him, obviously, coming into it. And I kind of learned as we went along. And same with everybody in the league. I think his name was kind of rising towards the end. But one thing that stood out for me when I watched him was
his lower body was a little bigger than you would initially thought when you see his measurables on paper, mm-hmm. how he's put together and just the way he ran. He was so smooth and just crafty, how he just steals yards after contact and just his skill set. He definitely would have been a great fit for us. I want to say we had him somewhere in the second, maybe third round.
Okay.
Maybe end of the second. And some of the concerns of why he wasn't the guy. I know, I think Jalen Hurd was there and then, you know, him leaving Alabama. Right. So I don't know the full, you know, process that they went through and the questions, the concerns that they all had with him. Mm-hmm. Cause when you watch him, I mean, he was a good looking player, you know, and yeah. but those questions that come up is why was he not the guy and mm-hmm. why didn't he stay at Alabama? You know, all these different things that I never dove into. Maybe that's why they put him lower than those other guys when skill set wise, he deserves to be right up there with everybody else. And he was, but mm-hmm. as far as the order, you know, that's kind of why we had him down low, I would imagine. But they liked him. I mean, John Eric Sullivan, you know, he went in there. He really liked the guy. He liked the kid. But, you know, it didn't work out for us. We didn't get him. But he would have been a great fit.
Well, again, as a Saints guy, I'm so glad y'all didn't. But the problem is, you know, there's 31 teams probably wishing they had, you know, got him too. He's been an electric player, obviously. All right, so we're getting close to the end of our hour, and we haven't even got through all the questions. I'm not going to keep you too much longer, but there is one player I wanted to ask you about. And, again, this kind of has a little bit of a New Orleans tie. Y'all were the team that signed Taysom Hill out of BYU as an undrafted free agent. And you may not have been privy to everything, but what was your plan for him? Did you see him as a quarterback? Did you see him kind of as almost a gadget player, the way that the Saints had used him? You know, and was it hard to cut him given the raw tools that he had?
So interestingly enough, when I did my internship in 2015, he was one of the guys I had to write up. And I didn't see him as an NFL quarterback, but there was no question this guy was a hell of a football player. Like, you know, I just, the accuracy, just as a passer, I just couldn't get behind him. I didn't buy into it. And I'm the type of guy that I don't think accuracy is something you can improve a whole lot on. Mm-hmm. Although, what's his face? The guy in Buffalo, made me eat my words. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of him either, but man, I got to give it to him. But anyway, Taysom, he was somebody that I remember the last line of my report. I was like, this guy's a hell of a football player. I just don't know what you do with him. Like, I don't know what to do with him. And it seems like the Saints have. And when he was with us, you know, so what happened was his pro day, I guess he went out and had a spectacular pro day because they kept talking about it, how great it was and how he was throwing the ball, this and that. But when he came to camp, you know, I remember talking and thinking like, you know, I didn't really see him as a quarterback, you know, but then again, I was like, maybe it's something I don't know. And they really liked him, but he wasn't there yet developmentally. And so it came down to a numbers game as far as keeping him. But they really liked him. And, you know, so they couldn't hold on to him. And you kind of see what he is now. But I don't think we would have used him in the right way. So he's definitely better off where he's at, in my opinion.
Do you recall if y'all had him to run routes or maybe go down as a gunner on special teams or anything along those lines?
No, not that I remember. And he could have, and I just didn't see it, but honestly, I really don't. I think they tried to make him a pure quarterback and it could have been a thought that they had. Maybe they just didn't get to it, you know, cause it was, you know, but mm-hmm. I never would have thought to use him that way. That's why I give the Saints so much credit for the creativity that they've used. And I don't even know if other teams would have done that, letting them run down on kickoff, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, he went to the perfect place. I don't think we would have used him that way. That's me saying this again. But for Taysom, I'm happy for him because he was a hell of a player. I just didn't know what you did with him. And they found a way to use him. And he deserved to get paid because of the type of football player he was. I just didn't see how it was going to happen. But mm-hmm. they made happened. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah, sure. All right. So let's wrap this up with a few players that were day three successes or undrafted free agent successes and kind of came out of your area. Although again, given mm-hmm. that you weren't full-time Southwest, but kind of you were, Let me just throw a few names at you. Oklahoma State offense running back Chris Carson.
You know, I didn't. I don't recall a lot about him, honestly, during the evaluation process. I know that I think his injury history was a concern. So he was on the board late, but I don't really recall much discussion about him. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of an issue that was talked about, his injury history. But physical guy, big guy, you know, solid player. But I don't think they were expecting him to come and do what he did. So good for him.
Sure, sure. Now, this kid was a member of the 18 draft class, but the SMU wide receiver Courtland Sutton.
Yeah, they really liked him. We liked him. I liked him. I had him, you know, as a top guy, kind of a end of the first round, second round type guy. He's another one that has upside as well, because I think he was a basketball player early in his career. Mm-hmm. And so still has another level to go development. He just wasn't the fastest or the twitchiest. So separating was going to be a concern, but he was still able to. He had compensating traits. You know, he had the length and the leaping ability and the size and hands to be able to overcome that. So that's why I still feel like, even though as a route runner he wasn't crispy and creating separation as a route runner, you know, he still may have problems every now and then with elite guys, but the fact that his wingspan and his size and his hands and leaping ability, I think he'll be able to overcome that. And I think he can be a dude in this league if he keeps developing.
Sure. And last one is a Houston quarterback, Greg Ward, who's now a wide receiver in the NFL.
No, I don't remember him as much, to be honest. I know he was on the board. I know our area guy at the time thought he was a good football player, but and I think he wrote him up as a receiver. But I don't remember the tape on him or the discussion on him, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Okay. Well, he's certainly been one of the unsung heroes, I guess, of the XFL. I think without the XFL, he probably doesn't get a chance to develop as a receiver the way he has become with the Eagles. And you know, that's – so there's kind of an extra chapter. He's a bit of a unique player in that regard.
Right.
But anyway, Charlie, I can't thank you enough for being on. It's been a fabulous hour. It feels like it's been 5 minutes. So many awesome insights. No. So many, you know, interesting things and things to add. And, again – you know, one of the most storied franchises in the NFL and a consistent winner, a team that even if they didn't have an Aaron Rodgers, I feel would still find a way to win, just because the Packers do so many things right. And, you know, there's a reason why they are consistently in that upper echelon. Thanks so much for your time, buddy. It's been invaluable.
Man, I love talking ball. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this hour, if you enjoyed talking about the game or the business or anything related to scouting and evaluation, please consider checking out my book, Scout Speak, which came out last year and talks all about the war stories, the job of scouting, the ins and outs, the pluses, the minuses, everything you'd want to know. It's a pretty quick read and pretty fun read, if I do say so myself. We also have our blog, Succeed in Football, and, of course, my website, Inside the League. We'll be back next week with talking more football and talking more evaluation in the Best Player Available podcast. See you then.